Thank you, everyone. This is just fantastic to be here. As I look in, I didn't realise we're going to have all the people up on the other floors. It's fantastic to see you all and people behind me as well. This is really, really brilliant. I think this is the second biggest audience we've had here since the late Queen, opened the building. So it is really, really fantastic to be here. It's great for me to be in Manchester. I have to confess, it is the first time I've been here since a particular football game last week. So I'm going to pass the usual Arsenal jokes today. Let's just say, Lucy, the fight goes on. And actually, that we can learn something from Arsenal and from Man City. Bear with me. Because all the way to the end of the season, the objective for both teams is the same: win the league. A goal that can be achieved only by teamwork, excellence, a blend of skills, different people pulling together on and off the pitch, contributions big and small. Tactics may change, Lucy, but the pursuit is single-minded. And the focus, the ambition, the mission, that never changes. Don't worry, I'm not going to turn up to Parliament in a tracksuit, but I do believe Britain needs a clearer sense of purpose, and that the way we run our country can be more like a brilliant sports team pursuing victory, that government can be driven forward by clear, focused objectives, and that this approach is vital for Britain to get its confidence, its hope, and its future back. And that's what I'm here to set out today: how a new mission-driven Labour government will end sticking plaster politics, and in doing so, get Britain back on its feet. I will never accept that this country is destined for decline, that our best days belong to the past. Success is all around us. It just needs direction. People have huge ambitions for their community. They just need a government that matches their ambition. And I think there is a yearning to come together, to be part of something bigger. That appetite, it's always been there. In all our big moments in our history, the creation of the NHS, during the pandemic in spades, the passing of the late Queen last year. A pride and a purpose that we have to unlock to drive our country forward towards a better future. All around the world, countries are gearing up for an almighty race for the opportunities of tomorrow. Britain must be on the start line, not back in the changing room tying the laces. Some nation is going to lead the world in offshore wind. Why not Britain? Some nation will create the first generation of quantum computers. Why not Britain? Some nation will design medicines personalised to match our unique DNA. Why not Britain? Why not? Because sticking plaster politics holds us back. Pick any of the current problems: energy security, productivity, immigration. We could be here all day. But it wouldn't matter. The pattern is always the same. Distracted by the short-term obsessions that fixate Westminster, held back by a cynicism which uses low trust in politics as an excuse to narrow our ambitions, blinkered to the potential of an active government setting the direction, we lurch from crisis to crisis, always reacting, always behind the curve. A sticking plaster, never a cure. Just look at the NHS. For years, we've had winter crises. Every year, the same panic, the same despair. This is life and death, and yet the government has never found a long-term solution. sticking plaster politics. The fundamentals never fixed. Not one crisis, but a cluster of crises that compound each other, combine to send a nation in a downward spiral. The evidence that this has happened to Britain is all around us. The only country in the G7 still poorer than it was before the pandemic. The worst decade for growth in two centuries. 7 million on waiting lists and rising. You don't see this everywhere. And look, it's easy to blame it all on the Tories. But some of these problems go back decades. Others are clearly aggravated by events, and I won't criticise this government unfairly for the consequences of the war in Ukraine. But over 13 years, by their actions and, crucially, their inactions, the Tories have made Britain's problems deeper, longer lasting and more painful than any of our competitors. Seriously, ask yourself this. Do I feel better off today than I did 13 years ago? What's the list of achievements they can rattle off, the legacy of our country that they can be proud of? And the idea that the people who created the mess around us are the right ones to clean it up, forget it. They're devoid of ideas. They're clapped out. They're divided. Too weak to challenge the vested interests in their party, which hold Britain back. Too closed in on themselves to think big for our country. Britain needs leadership with ambition, belief in the possibilities of the future, hunger to take on the big challenges. This is the case for change. A new government and a new way of governing. Britain needs both. With Labour, Britain will get both. And that's what today is about. A Britain that gets its future back. And I'll tell you how. We're going to transform the way Britain does its business from top to bottom. We'll modernise central government so it becomes dynamic, agile, strong and above all focused. More open to expertise, to partnership with business, unions, communities and civil society. Mission-driven government. A relentless focus on a clear set of priorities. An answer to the widespread call to fix the fundamentals. A long-term plan to unlock our pride and our purpose. A profound statement of intent. Mission-driven government. In some ways, it's a simple idea. Every business around the world, every organisation has a strategy. A nation needs one too. A plan, a framework, a compass that acts as a guide for everything we do. Making clear what is mission critical for my government and what isn't. A clarity that will ruffle feathers across Whitehall and beyond. But one that is necessary. Necessary to build Britain's long-term strength. Necessary to galvanise action for change across the country. Necessary because of what it can give to businesses, families and to working people. Certainty and change. Stability and success. A plan for today and a more secure future. And from this, something even more precious. A Britain once again on the front foot. With a sense of hope, of possibility, of ambition. A Britain that gets its future back. Five national missions, each one laser-targeted on the complex problems that drive our crises. the root causes that demand new thinking, new solutions born in all parts of the country, new ways of harnessing the ingenuity that's all around us. Each mission will come with clear, measurable outcomes, ambitions that won't be overtaken by the future, that raise our sights and, at first glance, seem too bold, invite a sharp intake of breath. A question: can this really be done? And then, when the doubts begin to subside, a new emotion and a new determination. Why not Britain? Let me give you an example. Zero carbon British electricity by 2030. A huge goal which will allow us to accelerate to net zero. Make no mistake, this goal would turn Britain into a clean energy superpower. It would put us ahead of any major economy in the world. That's a sharp intake of breath, by the way. And look, I'm already talking to CEOs, investors, entrepreneurs, unions, energy workers about how we get this done. The conversation always starts with a shake of the head. This is a bit much, Keir. Clean energy by 2030, that's going to be going some. But when I tell them, here's the ambition, here's the plan, and here's the opportunity for you, there is a powerful urgency to make it happen. But it will only happen with the right building blocks, cheaper bills, real energy security, independence from tyrants like Putin, and an industrial strategy that can win the race for jobs in the green industries of the future. Now, each of our five missions will contain this formula: a measurable goal, the building blocks of a clear strategy, and the first steps of a credible long-term plan. First steps like the insulation of 19 million homes, like training for people to be heat pump fitters, builders, engineers, electricians, like GB Energy, a new British company that will supercharge our drive for cleaner energy, and taken together, lay a new foundation for prosperity in every community. Every community. Now, today, I want to focus on Labour's mission for the British economy. Because no mission is more important to the future of our country. Now, in the last year alone, Rachel Reeves and I have met thousands of business leaders, CEOs all over the country, leaders in retail, in hospitality, life sciences, digital, clean tech, the creative industries. We've met workers on the shop floor and those suffering profoundly from the cost of living crisis right across Britain. And through all of this, what we need has become crystal clear: growth. Economic growth is the oxygen for our ambitions, the lifeblood of a strong society and a successful economy. Higher living standards, better public services, more hope and opportunity. Without strong growth, these are just empty slogans. And let me spell it out. If growth over the last 13 years had been as strong as under the last Labour government, we would have £40 billion extra to spend on schools and the NHS without a single extra penny in tax. Britain needs to create more wealth, needs to be more competitive. It's that simple. Now, you may ask, it's easy to want growth. So what's so different about you? Well, I say, for 13 years, there's been no plan, no urgency, and no one with the courage to do the hard yards that will change who growth is for and where it comes from. So let me announce the economic mission of the next Labour government. By the end of Labour's first term, we will deliver the highest sustained growth in the G7. Note that word, sustained. This isn't growth on a graph. This isn't going to be gamed by clever statistics. This is going to be growth that makes people better off, higher living standards. I want more growth in London. Of course I do. But I'm not interested in a model of growth where London races ahead and the rest of the country stagnates. Nor will I be satisfied if our growth depends on creating jobs that are low paid and insecure. We need growth from the grassroots, a new model, wealth created everywhere, by everyone, for everyone. So our mission on growth comes with a second yardstick. It must be powered by good jobs and stronger productivity in every part of the country. Every part of the country. Judge us against that. But judge us on our plan. Over the last 3 years, we've put the building blocks in place. And we have those first steps, necessary but not sufficient, which can tackle the immediate problems. So when we say growth demands we unlock the potential of every worker, that we'll get Britain back to work and thriving once it gets there, we can say the first steps are reforming. Reforming apprenticeships, a modern childcare system, and a new deal for working people that will make work pay. When we say growth depends on seizing the opportunities of tomorrow, not falling behind, on embracing technology, innovation, science, we can say the first steps are a reformed planning system, a more powerful British business bank that can support startups to grow and scale, and a credible industrial strategy that gets everyone around the table and removes barriers to investment. When we say growth needs an economy that is resilient to global shocks and open to global trade, that means we will use levers like procurement to build up those supply chains that are critical for our security. And we will fix the Brexit deal and reset our relationship with the EU. And when we say growth must now be built on the contribution of every community, every region, every nation, that means we'll give communities the right powers for robust private sector growth, to control their economic destiny, stand on their own feet, and put those powers in our Take Back Control Bill. And the one thing I need to be really clear about, these four shifts in Britain's approach, this new model, depend on a fifth. From chaos to certainty, the rock of economic stability, where policies are always fully costed, fiscal rules are sound and followed rigorously, constraints accepted, institutions respected, not bypassed. And as a result, investors here and across the world have the confidence and the certainty that they need to get behind our missions. I look at what some of the Tories are saying at the moment, and I can't believe they need to learn this lesson again. That they don't understand still that chaos has a cost. The noises off you hear from them, they're a primal scream. The last gasp of a party caught between a rock of stagnation and the hard place of its economic recklessness. The message to the British people is clear. Labour is the party of fair growth. Labour is the party of economic stability. Labour is the party of ambition. That stability, that certainty, the security of good government must always provide. Without it, mission-driven government just won't work. You have to do the basics. Of course you do. I look at a problem like our asylum system. And yes, it needs a solution. It's incredible the government doesn't have a plan. That they won't match our plans to set up a dedicated NCA unit to deal with this. with specialist officers working every day to take down the gangs and to reach out across the channel to countries who share this challenge. National security at our borders, in our communities, on the world stage, is the number one duty of government always. That's why I went to see President Zelensky last week, to underline the total solidarity of my Labour Party towards his fight for freedom. Mission-driven government is about what we do beyond that, how we restore our ambition, raise our sights above the quick fixes, the pandering to the noisy crowd, the short-termism that will only ever provide the sticking plaster. But also, how you bring our country together, open minds, change how government operates, end the silos. It's about creating the conditions for ambition to be realised, for pride to be harnessed, purpose to be unlocked. 5 national missions. Mission 1, secure the highest sustained growth in the G7 with good jobs, productivity growth in every part of the country, growth that makes everyone, not just a few, better off. Mission 2, build an NHS fit for the future by reforming health and care services to speed up treatment. Harness life sciences and technology, reduce preventable illnesses, and cut health inequalities. Mission 3, make Britain's streets safe by reforming the police and criminal justice system, preventing crime early, tackling violence against women and girls, and stopping criminals getting away without punishment. Tough on crime, tough on the causes of crime. Now, you've heard that before, but it's right. Mission 4, break down the barriers to opportunity at every stage for every child by reforming childcare, reforming education, raising standards everywhere, and preparing young people for work and for life. And 5, yes, we will make Britain a clean energy superpower. And these missions, these 5 missions, will form the backbone of the Labour manifesto, the pillars of the next Labour government. They will be measurable, so we can track progress and be held to account. Long term, so we can look beyond the day-to-day, informed by experts and the public, so we can build a coalition for change. And each will support our drive for growth. Each will help us get our future back. But look, if we're going to make it work, it will need a totally new mindset. We have to understand that the how is as important as the what. So we're going to ask different questions of public servants and ministers. Difficult questions. How do we devolve decision-making to those with real expertise on the ground? How do we bring people affected every day by the issues we must solve into the heart of our decision-making? How do we make sure that our relentless focus on the ends goes alongside flexible, creative and imagination about the means? How do we change incentives so that we embrace technology rather than be afraid of the risks that come with the new? And finally, one more question that draws on my experience running the Crown Prosecution Service. How, in everything we do, can we take a preventative approach, catching problems early before they fester and grow into something more deep-rooted? We will ask these questions, because I'm not interested in dancing around issues or mouthing off about them, but in bringing people together with purpose and intent. And look, when I say everything will not be fixed just by spending more money, That's not just because of the damage the Tories have done to our economy, or because we think it's the responsible thing to do. Though all of that is true. It's because the more I delve into these challenges, the more I can see things that are simply not working. Things that could be sped up, joined up, given direction, made to work better. This is at the core of my politics. Government can prevent problems as well as fix them, can shape markets rather than serving them, can lead a collective national effort on growth and innovation. But without reforming the role of government, none of that will happen. Equally, I have to say, I'm not concerned about whether investment or expertise comes from the public or private sector. I just want to get the job done. And I mean that. We have to get it done. There is a massive role for the private sector in mission-driven government. But if the aspiration is merely to replace the public sector while extracting a rent, to privatise the profits while socialising the risk, that takes us nowhere. Mission-driven government is a different way altogether. Not state control or pure free markets, but a genuine partnership, sleeves rolled up, working for the national interest. Not command and control, Whitehall knows best, but an approach that understands what national renewal means. Change for all, from all. And that's the best thing about mission-driven government. You can't do it without people. You can't grow the economy without entrepreneurs creating new ideas. You can't make streets safe without communities looking out for one another. You can't make healthier lives without people changing their habits. Change can come from unlocking the pride and purpose of all of us. I grew up working class in a small town. All my life, I've seen potential thrown away. People who don't get the respect that they deserve. Who feel invisible in their own country. I want a Britain where you don't have to change who you are just to get on. A country where success belongs to everyone. And success comes from everyone. A future built by everyone, everywhere. That's what our missions are about. Change from the whole country. National renewal from a new national purpose. And that's my role in this. As Prime Minister, my personal mission would be to make mission-driven government a reality. To keep our eyes focused on the prize. So in the coming months, for each mission, the whole of the Shadow Cabinet will be supporting me, meeting with experts, yeah, we still believe in them, but also frontline practitioners, the doers, the thinkers, the entrepreneurs, the innovators, the British people. And we're going to ask them, what will it take? What are the barriers? What needs to change to bring these missions alive? And crucially, how do we make these missions a vehicle for hope for you, your family, your community? How do we build a bridge from the Britain we see around us, full of potential but short of direction, to the fairer, greener, more dynamic future our missions will deliver? That's the defining work of my Labour government, and we will prepare for it now. There is no time to lose. I'm well aware that at a moment like this, it's hard to hope, harder still to convince people that they and politicians have a common cause. Of course it is. People have listened to politicians and pulled together before. They did it after the financial crash, when politicians made them pay for the mess caused by banks. They did it in the pandemic, while the government broke all the rules that they were following. They might even have done it after Brexit. but nobody in charge could find the words to ask. People are entitled to turn around and say, why should we trust you? But I say to them, the change you want, the Britain you want, the better future you want, we can walk towards it together. Every region and nation of the UK must be heard. But we have to come together. National missions for national renewal. The fastest growing economy in the G7. A clean energy superpower. Public services that lift us up. A mission-driven government that will end sticking plaster politics. We'll unlock the pride and purpose that is in every community. We'll give this country its confidence, its hope, its future back. Now is the time for us all to be part of something bigger and to say with one voice, why not Britain? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Amazing. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. We're now, colleagues, we're now going to take various questions from the media, starting with Beth from Sky News. Beth.
Hi.
And we're going to try and keep these short and one each, Beth.
Okay. Thank you. Keir Starmer, you're 28 points ahead in the polls reflecting voter dissatisfaction with the current government. People want their country to work. But can you honestly say that your blue sky thinking, rather than clear specific policies such as cutting working people's taxes or ensuring that they'll get a hospital appointment, is in any way relatable? Does this risk turning off, even angering, people that you need to vote for you? And given that you've ditched policies such as scrapping tuition fees and nationalising energy companies, the policies that you won the Labour leadership on, why should anyone believe anything you say anyway? Thank you.
Beth, look, thank you for that question. I mean, on this central question, we do tend to go round and round. You're quite right to say, look, what are you going to do about the NHS this winter? What are you going to do about energy bills this spring? And we have to answer that question. I accept that. And that's why we do have answers to those questions, why we were the first to lead on freezing energy bills. But the problem if we stop there with that sort of retail offer for the here and now is that we'll never fix the fundamentals. And therefore, next year, we'll be back in an NHS crisis. And you'll be sitting here, Beth, and you'll ask me the same question. What are you going to do about the here and now? And probably the year after and the year after. We go round and round in circles, sticking plaster politics. But that's why we've got to fix it. For the NHS, if we don't have more medical students, more nurses and doctors coming through, then we will never get out of this cycle. And therefore, this long term has to be harnessed with the short term missions for a mission-led government. Same on energy, to be perfectly honest. Freezing the bills this year, and then you'll come back next year and say, well, we're going to freeze the bills next year and the year after. And the answer is, we do have to do that. That's why we led on that policy. But we also have to have a better answer for energy security, energy bills in the future. And that's why running towards renewables, having our energy by clean energy by 2030 is so important. And that's the frustration. I mean, we've had 13 years of sticking plaster politics. We've had 13 years of going round and round in circles, always ending up in the same place and never moving forward. And this is absolutely needed. And I reject the argument that the public don't get it. Everybody knows in their own life that you do fix a problem when it comes to maybe your pipes or your car or whatever it is. But everybody knows you've also got to fix the fundamentals. Otherwise, you'd just be back in the same place at the end of the exercise. And that's what this is about. And you know, all you've got, you know, from the government, frankly, is sort of short-term promises to clear up their own mess. These are long-term missions for national renewal. Thank you, Beth. Chris from BBC. On the trust issue, look, I think anybody looking at these missions will realise that they're hard thought through, they reflect the really big challenges of the country, and they come, each of them, not just with the mission, which is really ambitious, hard to achieve, but also with the underpinning, the specifics that are needed as to how they're going to be achieved, and actually, for each of them, with the first steps, what are you going to do, as it were, from day one? And we'll set those out, obviously, for the economy, we've already set them out, for net zero, we've set them out, and we'll do that for the other missions. Thank you, Beth. Chris.
Thank you. Chris Mason from BBC News. Let's talk about one specific, if we may, about economic growth. What would you do around corporation tax this April? It's due to go up. Should it go up? Plus, if I may, what do you say to those who say, look, you were elected on a particular set of policies for the Labour leadership and you've junked loads of those, so why should we believe what you're saying now is something you'll stick to?
Well, Chris, on corporation tax, we haven't opposed the increase in tax. But I have to say, and I think this will reflect anyone who's been talking to CEOs and businesses, as we've been intensely for the last year or two, we've been sitting down and saying, what is it that inhibits growth? How do we unlock this? And I have to say, in all honesty, very few of them say it's corporation tax. Nearly all of them say we don't have the basic security. So global investors are not saying we don't have the money or the wherewithal to invest, that we don't have the ambition. What they say is we don't have the circumstances of stability that would allow us to go forward. And, you know, on a political level, it's quite funny. And we joke about the fact we've had three prime ministers and four chancellors and four budgets last year. It's become a political joke. For investors, for those people that help us grow our economy, they say, well, just at the moment, I'm not that interested in investing in your country. I don't see the long-term plan. I don't see the missions. I don't see a government that's got the wherewithal to stick to the plan. And therefore, I don't think that these are the conditions for growth. And that's what we're driving at here. So, yes, you know, corporation tax is going to go up. But actually, that isn't the thing that most people are talking about. On the programme, I mean, when I stood for leadership of the Labour Party, I ended every single hustings by saying everything you've heard today won't happen if we don't have a Labour government. And therefore, the single absolute mission has to be to get a Labour government. And that's the basis on which I was elected in. The vast majority of Labour members and supporters are 100% behind what we're doing. They really like these missions and they want us to put them into action and to do what I promised when I stood as leader, which is to take our party from the worst general election defeat since 1935 into a Labour victory, into a Labour government. They desperately want that because that's the whole point of the Labour Party, to form a Labour government to change lives. Thank you, Chris. Anushka.
Thank you. Keir Starmer, obviously to do any of this, you have to win an election. And to win an election, you have to persuade voters that this will change their lives immediately. So what I want to know is how all of this translates into your immediate priorities. If you were to become Prime Minister, what would you do on day one?
Well, Anushka, let me take that head on, because each of the missions is about long-term change. It's about a decade of renewable. But each of them is underpinned then by the specifics. What do you need to achieve that? And what are the first steps along that road? You know, whether that's, for example, on energy, insulating 19 million homes, setting up GB Energy, in health, doubling the number of medical students so we can actually have the next cohort. Of course, we also have to have short-term answers. The election's still very likely to be, what are you going to do about bills, particularly energy bills, to which we've got a specific policy, which is the public are very, very keen on. But I do reject this idea that the public somehow don't get it, that you need to sit to fix the immediate problem, but also do the fundamentals. I really reject. I think many, many people say, of course I want the fundamentals. If you could actually do this, if you've got a plan, we've lost hope in plans. This is a plan. This is a strategic plan. These are missions for the future. We haven't had that for the last 13 years, and that's a big part of the problem. And therefore, as I say, I don't accept the sort of basic proposition that the electorate will simply say, fix my bills for this year, and I'm not interested in anything else. Of course we need to fix the bills for this year. I get that. I'm not shying away from it. But we also need to fix the fundamentals. Otherwise, what is government for? Just to keep fixing the problems and end up in 5 years in the same place where you started, then another five, and then another five, and we don't progress as a nation. And for 13 years, we've been stagnating. We've been in a sort of crouch position where we almost lack the confidence now to even face up to the challenges of the future. We've got to turn all that around. Thank you, Anoushka. Andy Bell.
Thank you very much. Andy Bell, Five News. Keir Starmer, isn't all this just another way of saying to people, sorry, there is no more money? There are a lot of people at home at the moment who would like a Labour government, if there is one, to spend more money on the NHS, on the police, on various other areas of public services. What you're saying to them is, actually, what I have here are missions, and as for more money, I'm afraid you can forget that.
No, Andy, that's not right. Of course, some of these will require money. And where we put money in, we will have it fully costed and set that out. If we work in this way, it will be a catalyst for unlocking private sector money as well. And therefore, this isn't all about how much money from the Treasury is needed to make these missions work. It's how do you create the conditions in which the public and the private sector can work together. But there's also something else, Andy, and that is reform. I've run a public service for 5 years. And I know that if you put more money in your public service, you will get a better outcome. But you won't fundamentally change it if you don't reform. And that's why reform is a big part of what we're saying here on the health service, on the way we run the country, the industrial strategy. Reform has to be part of the answer. You know, in criminal justice, it used to frustrate me. We were in a silo. And you put more money in the top, but it might speed things up. But it didn't fundamentally change actually the outcome. And so reform is as important as the money we put in. Thank you, Andy. I've got Henry from The Times. Henry.
Hi, thanks. Last week you effectively barred Jeremy Corbyn from standing for Labour again. When you said you were 100% behind making him Prime Minister, were you telling the truth? And if you were, why should people who couldn't vote for Labour under his leadership trust your judgment? And if you weren't telling the truth, why should anyone trust that you're going to stick to these missions?
Henry, look, first, let's be absolutely clear about what I said about Jeremy Corbyn last week. I said that he won't stand at the next election as a Labour candidate. That was as I was doing a press conference for the Equality and Human Rights Commission, where after over 2 years, having found us to be in breach of the law, they had concluded that we'd done enough, that our plans were sustainable, that they could take us out of special measures. And I said that the Labour Party now is unrecognisable from the Labour Party of 2019. I wasn't celebrating that we were being taken out of special measures, but I certainly wasn't going to be going backwards. The last election, you know, like every Labour member and supporter, of course I campaigned for a Labour government in the same way that every Tory supporter and member campaigned for a Conservative government. But I recognised that the electorate delivered their verdict on Labour in 2019, and that therefore the first thing we... If you, a verdict like that, you don't sort of look at the electorate and say, well, what were you doing? Didn't you hear us? You look at your own party and say, it's us that's got to change. Thank you, Henry. Pippa.
Hi, Pippa Carrera from The Guardian. Keir, you said you want the highest sustained growth in the G7. Brexit has hit economic growth by billions of pounds since 2016. You said today you'd fix Brexit if you get into government, but exactly how?
Pippa, firstly, I think we have to confront the fact that the lack of growth in our economy can't simply be put down to Brexit. We've had a problem with growth in our economy since 2010. And a lot of this predates Brexit. And therefore, if we get fixated that Brexit is the only issue when it comes to growth, I think we'll be making a big mistake. And I'm not pretending that we don't need to improve the deal we've got with the EU, but just to put it into context. Secondly, I'd say that for many, many investors, it's the stability that they are looking for, the non-trashing of the institutions. The idea that the Labour government will be a government of sound money, that's what's making the difference in the conversations that we are having. But I do think the Brexit deal needs to be improved. I think if you look at the deal we've got, it's obviously not working very well. It wasn't oven-baked, it wasn't even half-baked. Look at the impact. We have to have a closer trading relationship, not just fixing the protocol in Northern Ireland, but more generally. But as I say, I think, you know, the answer to growth can't be simply laser-focused on Brexit. And what I said about growth, I just want to reinforce this, Pippa, is it has to be growth everywhere across the whole of the country. There is a model of growth that says you supercharge London and the South East, and I don't want London and the South East held back. But I don't want, my ambition for Labour government is that you have London and the South East and then sort of redistribution for everywhere else. I think that is totally the wrong model. It is totally disrespectful. Our ambition is for growth in every single place across the United Kingdom, not just London and the South East, not just Manchester. I love the growth in Manchester. It's really good. But I want growth in every town around Manchester as well, and the same for every city across the country. Thank you, Pippa. Amy from The Telegraph.
Amy. Hi, Amy Gibbons from The Telegraph. On the Shamima Begum case, you've said you support the courts blocking her return. So would Labour ensure that other former jihadists do not return as well?
National security has to come first. The court has looked at all of the material and come to a very firm conclusion, and I support what the court has done. But under a Labour government, national security will always come first. And that's why in my speech I said that, if you like, the mission sit in a basket of economic stability, of strong borders, but also of strong national security. Thank you very much. David from the Mail.
Thank you. You just briefly mentioned the asylum system, but the issue of small boats crossing the Channel doesn't feature as one of your main five missions. By contrast, the PM's five-point plan includes a very clear pledge to stop the boats. What's the thinking behind not making it one of your main missions, given that it's an important issue for voters?
Yeah, David, thank you for that question. As I set out in my speech, absolutely fundamental. They are the fundamentals of good government. The mission's about what you do beyond that. But it's absolutely clear you need to have secure borders. And if you're going to have secure borders, you need to have a plan. And we've set out time and again what our plan is. The most important bits being actually getting the asylum system to work, processing the claims. When I first learnt that of all the people that arrived by boat in 2021, only 4% have had their claims processed, I was really shocked, and I think anybody else would be really shocked. That's a broken system, broken by this government. But if you really want to do the fixing bit, then you do need a new unit within the NCA, extra officers to do the cross-border control. I worked, when I was Director of Public Prosecutions, we formed cross-border teams to deal with, you know, drugs being taken over borders, guns being taken over borders. Why can't we do the same in relation to the gangs that are driving those into desperate situations, into those boats? So it's absolutely central. It's a given for me. We've already set out a plan for it. Frankly, if the government picked up our plan, we might make some progress. Thank you, David. Ashley from The Mirror.
Ashley Calburn from The Mirror. Jeremy Corbyn said in his first planned speech outside Number 10, the one that didn't happen, that he would have announced an end to homelessness in Britain and pledging to end rough sleeping within a week. Is that something you could commit to? And secondly, the team in front of you today, the Shadow Cabinet, can you rule out a Shadow Cabinet reshuffle before the next general election?
let's deal with the second. I don't know any leader of any political party that would stand on a platform like this and announce anything that could conceivably be construed to be the beginnings of a reshuffle. But look, on homelessness, of course we want to end homelessness, but, that isn't going to happen if we don't achieve these missions, if we don't get that sort of economic growth, if we don't fix our health service. We know that homelessness is bound up with mental health and young people in desperate place. So ending homelessness is, you know, a laudable aim. But what I'm in the business is of how are you going to do it? How do you have to fix the country to make sure that actually happens? And since I'm on this, Ashley, don't let me go with this, because since I've been in policy, I've met so many people who eloquently describe a problem, brilliantly describe a problem. I want to know how you fix it. how you actually change the country for the better. Roll your sleeves up and have a mission-driven government. And so that's the approach we're taking with these five missions. Chloe, from the Eye. Chloe.
Thank you. Chloe Chaplin, Eye Newspaper. You said you want to reform childcare. What is currently under consideration with that? And do you think universal, free or low-cost childcare would be a good would bring a good return on investment of public money?
Yeah, look, on childcare, thank you, Chloe, for that, because it's really important. Because childcare unlocks not just the potential of children, but also the potential of parents, particularly women parents, in order to get back to work, etc., etc. So childcare is central to our missions. It's central to not just removing the barriers to opportunity for every child, but also to economic growth. What we've already committed to is childcare that covers breakfast clubs, the early part of the day. Obviously, you know, that's a first step. There's more that needs to be done, but childcare is central to our plans for all the reasons I've just given. Jack from The Sun. Jack. Hi, Jack.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Akia. In your speech just now and in the questions, you made a big issue of trust. Can we circle back to that? Because many people will watch you setting out your five missions today and think, well, hang on, didn't he believe in a second referendum until he was a Brexiteer and he wanted to make Jeremy Corbyn Prime Minister, as we've heard, until he said that there's no place in politics for him? As we hear today, you now actually believe that Shemima Begum shouldn't come back to the UK. So today, can you make a proper guarantee to readers and voters that if you do accede to the highest office in the land, there'll be no more flip-flopping?
Well, look, Jack, we've got to remember that on things like the second referendum, we've been through 3 years of a parliament that was completely stuck and unable to find a way forward, which didn't have leadership because the Conservative government didn't reach out across the parliament. You had a Prime Minister who had a majority, went to the country and lost the majority, and their whole party imploded. But as we go forward, look, these are our missions. This is our way of working. And I'm very happy to have that tested. If anyone wants to know, do the public trust and want any of this, then there's a very good way to find out. Let's have a general election. And Jack, I will put my five long-term missions for national renewal, a decade of national renewal, up against Rishi Sunak's five promises to clean up his own mess. And the public can decide which of those they want. Thank you, Jack. Jennifer from the FT.
Hi, Jen Williams from the
Jen.
FT. Yeah. You talked about not wanting to simply supercharge London and the South East as part of your growth model. For many people, that would sound a little bit like Treasury's sort of traditional way of thinking about things. And Treasury orthodoxy has been criticised as a barrier to growth by everyone from Liz Truss to Andy Burnham. So I wondered whether you agreed that there is a cultural problem in the Treasury, and what would you change about it in order to hit your growth target? And just quickly, would you also consider as part of your growth plan a kind of Joe Biden-style massive injection of state aid to post-industrial areas? Thanks.
Jen, look, thank you very much for that question. On this question of growth and where we have growth, this is crucially important, because I think that unless it's growth, economic growth, in every part of the country, it is meaningless for millions of people. And until now, most people, when politicians talk about economic growth, think, well, that's all very nice, but it won't be anywhere near me. And we have to change that. And that means that we have to be bold enough to push power and resources and decision-making away from Westminster and Whitehall. That's why we launched the Gordon Brown Commission on the Future of the UK in the latter part of last year. That is about making sure that people with skin in the game make decisions about what happens in their area. The conditionality that comes with that is it's got to come with a plan that's actually going to work, and it can't just push a sort of London-based problem somewhere else. So what I don't want to see in Manchester is Manchester city centre doing well, but the outlying towns not so much, and the versions of this across the country. And so that will only come if we're brave enough to do what we set out in that Commission on the Future of the UK. As for Biden, I mean, Biden is pushing ahead with net zero in a way which is causing the EU and other countries to look up and say, well, how do we, in fact, have our own plans that match that? And what we're setting out today does match that in terms of the ambition. But where there is money, it will be the same old answer from me, which is everything we do will be fully costed, will be set out. But this is not all about public money. If we can't use these missions to unlock the private sector, then they won't work. But that's why we've already been talking to the private sector. I've already had hard discussions with CEOs across, you know, the world and in this country. What will it take? What do you want to see from a government that will actually unlock the potential of this country? Thank you, Jen. Joseph from the Manchester Evening News. Joseph,
hi.
Now doing Jen's old job.
Not quite. So the Manchester Evening News has been campaigning for new rules forcing social landlords to fix damp and mould within strict time limits following the tragic death of two-year-old Awab Ishaq in Rochdale. Will the Labour Party support our campaign for Awab's Law, which has been tabled as an amendment to the Social Housing Regulation Bill in Parliament? And what would you do in government to make sure that such a tragedy doesn't happen again?
Yeah, look, Joseph, thank you for raising that, because I think everybody, when we saw that case, was absolutely shocked. And of course we have to support whatever measures are necessary to make sure that that doesn't happen again. And I hark back to my previous life as a lawyer. I saw, I don't know how many cases where I was representing people in rented accommodation who were putting up with damp, and because we took action, the damp was abated for a bit, but nobody fixed the fundamentals. And so we're back with other cases over and over again. And that's why it has to be part of a mission-driven government to change this. But, Joseph, look, we do support whatever measures are necessary. And then Dan from Politico.
Hello, Dan. Dan Bloom from Politico. You spoke earlier in the Q&A about a decade of renewal. Apart from your pledge on GDP, which you've spelled out a timescale for, do you need two terms to achieve the missions you've set out today, or can they be completed and measured after 5 years?
Dan, thank you for that. Look, I'm pretty humble about this. We lost badly in 2019, and my ambition is to take the Labour Party back into power. That will be an incredible journey if we're able to do it, and I'm mindful that every single vote has to be earned, and we've got a long, long way to go. But I'm also honest enough to say that some of these issues are not going to be fixed within 5 years. They're longer term than that. These missions come with measurable goals along the way, the underpinning and the specific first steps that will put us on that journey. But I don't think it will come as a surprise to anyone that some of these issues are going to be longer term. That's why we've said a decade of national renewal. Now, I'm not getting ahead of myself, because I am humble about this. I do know that every single vote has to be earned. I do know we've got a long, long way to go. And, you know, that what we have to say has to be put before the electorate, and we have to persuade them. But at the same time, I'm not going to shy away from the fact that after the damage that's been done in the last 13 years, it is going to take time to fix the fundamentals. What I'm proud to do today is to set out a plan that explains what are the changes we want to see, and how are we going to do the fixing of the fundamentals. Thank you all very much indeed. Thank you for being here. Thank you for those that are standing.